Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New Heights Show on Education. This is your host, Kathy Woodring, and joining me is co-host Pamela Clark, founder and director of New Heights Educational Group. Pamela is an excellent mentor, and her help is much appreciated. Today's show topic is Evolution of American Philosophy, Part 2. You can call in to speak to us anytime during the show at 347-633-9225 or contact New Heights at 419-786-0247 or New Heights Education at yahoo.com or visit our site at www.newheightseducation.org. You can also chat with us live during any of the shows. Please remember to click Allow Us for updates on upcoming shows, or you can visit our website to see host bios and keep track of your favorite host and our shows. Thank you to Daniel Flores, volunteer program developer, for his design work for the host pages. A special thank you to Chris Schmidt of Smyrna, Georgia, for donating his car. We received the check last week. New Heights continues to offer its biweekly Enrichment Day co-op classes. Next class will be on February 28th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Classes will be held in Defiance at the Zion Lutheran Church. Please note that the classes are not religion-based unless the families want there to be one. Parents and students are required to participate in these classes and help with the planning of them. We are offering a reading time, science class, Irish dancing and karate, and are open to more suggestions. Students are invited to not only attend, but to participate in instructing some of the classes. If you are interested in participating, volunteering, or tutoring, please contact us directly. Tutors and or teachers are needed. We are in need of tutors and or teachers in Defiance and Putnam County, and anyone that would like to volunteer should contact us directly. There are also some paid opportunities. We currently need reading tutors. On Sunday, March the 8th, 2014, we will be holding our student advisory meeting in Holgate, Ohio, and online. If you are interested in student leadership opportunities, we urge you to consider attending. We will also be discussing the new Student Leadership Council that we recently launched for older youth. The Student New National Student Leadership Council is for students in grades 9th grade through college students aged 14 through 23. This is open to the public, and any student from any state is eligible to participate. The bake sale and candy or candle sale was to be held on March the 9th, but for presently we're not sure about availability, and the planning may be at a later date once we hear more about what is available. Now, Pamela has some announcement about the library building.
Hello. Thank you, Kathy. Our building in Sherwood, Ohio, has recently been sold, and, you know, we want to thank Lynn and Kathy Bergman for allowing us to use the donated building up until now as a library, but we do need to relocate the books, and the new owners of the building would like to take possession of it on March 25th, so as you can tell, that's not much time to find a home for our library. And this is a very important library. It serves a lot of families in the community. And if someone has a building or a space that they could let us use, it is a tax-deductible donation, and they can contact us as soon as possible to, share that information with us. And then a couple other announcements. Our next Enrichment Day class is actually March the 14th. Our last one was on February 28th, but the next one's on March 14th. And then I believe that Kathy said that our student advisory group meeting was on Sunday the 8th, but the 8th is Saturday, so it's this coming Saturday, March 8th, and that's at 12 noon. And you can join online or in person. Just call for the address if you want to come in person. So now back to Kathy.
Thank you, Pamela. Today's topic is Evolution of American Philosophy, Part 2. The last episode concentrated on the philosophy of John Locke, who was described as inspiring Thomas Paine. The radical ideas of these early philosophers seem to have influenced much of the thinking of some of the prominent founding fathers. Therefore, this episode will concentrate on colonial thought and the philosophy of the founders, especially deism, for the most part. Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, mentions the following. Deism is the belief that reason and observation of the natural world are sufficient to determine the existence of a creator, accompanied with the rejection of revelation and authority as a source of religious knowledge. Deism gained prominence in the 17th and 19th centuries during the Age of Enlightenment, especially in Britain, France, Germany, and the United States. Among intellectuals raised as Christians who believed in one God but found fault with organized religion and did not believe in supernatural events such as miracles. The irrerency of scriptures or the Trinity. Deism is derived from deus, the Latin word for God. Deistic ideas influenced several leaders of the American and French revolutions. Two main forms of deism currently exist, classical deism and modern deism. The words deism and theism are both derived from words for God, the former from Latin deus, the latter from Greek theos. Prior to the 17th century, the terms deism and deist were used interchangeably with the terms theism and theist, respectively. Theologians and philosophers of the 17th century began to give a different significance to the words. Both theist and deist asserted belief in one supreme God, the Creator, and agreed that God is personal and distinct from the world. But the theist thought that God remained actively interested in and operative in the world which he had made, whereas the deist maintained that God endowed the world at creation with self-sustaining and self-acting powers, and then abandoned the world to the operation of these powers, acting as second causes. One of the remarkable features of deism is that the critical elements did not overpower the constructive elements. As E. Graham Warren observed, a strange feature of the deist controversy is the apparent acceptance of all parties, of the conviction that the existence of God. M. Paul Hazard has recently described the deist of this time as rationalist, with nostalgia for religion. Men, that is, who had allowed the spirit of the age to separate them from orthodoxy, but who liked to believe that the slope they had started upon was not slippery enough to lead them to atheism. Wikipedia continues the evaluation of the concepts with the concepts of reason. Reason was the ultimate court of appeal for deists. Kendall presents a Lockean definition of reason, self-evident truth, and the light of nature. By the rational faculties, then, we mean the natural ability a man has to apprehend, judge, and infer. The immediate objects of which faculties are not the things themselves, but the ideas the mind conceives of them. Knowledge is the perception of the agreement or disagreement of our ideas, and any two of these, when joined together so as to be affirmed or denied of each other, make what we call a proposition. Knowledge occurs either immediately on the bare intuition of these two ideas or terms so joined, and is therefore styled intuitive knowledge or self-evident truth, or by the intervention of some other idea or ideas. This is called demonstrative knowledge. If there were not some propositions which need not to be proved, it would be in vain for men to argue with one another, because there would be no basis for demonstrative reasoning. These propositions, which need no proof, we call self-evident, because by comparing the ideas signified by the terms of such propositions, we immediately discern their agreement or disagreement. This is, as I said before, what we call intuitive knowledge. Intuitive knowledge may, I think, be called divine inspiration, as immediately from God, and not acquired by any human deduction or drawing of consequences. This certainly is that divine, that uniform light which shines in the minds of all men. Wikipedia.org continues with describing the history of religion and the deist mission with mention of freedom and necessity. Enlightenment thinkers who, under the influence of Newtonian science, tended to view the universe as a vast machine created and set in motion by a creator being that continues to operate according to natural law without any divine intervention. This view naturally led to what was then usually called necessitarianism. The modern term is determinism, the view that everything in the universe, including human behavior, is completely causally determined by antecedent circumstances and natural law. See, for example, Lemaître's L'Homme Machine. As a consequent, debates about freedom versus necessity were a regular feature of Enlightenment religion and philosophical discussions. Because of their high regard for natural law and for the idea of a universe without miracles, the deists were especially susceptible to the temptations of determinism. Reflecting the intellectual climate of the time, there were differences among deists about freedom and determinism. Some, as Anthony Collins, actually were necessitarians. Beliefs about immorality of the soul is another entry in Wikipedia, stating that deists hold a variety of beliefs about the soul. Some, such as Lord Herbert of Cherbury and William Wollaston, held that souls exist, survive death, and in the afterlife are rewarded or punished by God for their behavior in life. Some, such as Benjamin Franklin, believed in reincarnation or resurrection. Others, such as Thomas Paine, had definitive beliefs about the immorality of the soul. I believe in one God and no more, and I hope for happiness beyond this life. By Thomas Paine, The Age of Reason, Part 1. I trouble not myself about the manner of future existence. I contend myself with believing even to positive conviction that the power that gave me existence is able to continue it in any form and manner he pleases, either with or without this body. And it appears more probable to me that I shall continue to exist hereafter then that I should have had existence as I now have before the existence began. Thomas Page, Paine, The Age of Reason, Part 1, Recapitulation. Still others, such as Anthony Collins, Bolingbroke, Thomas Chubb, and Peter Annette, were materialists and either denied or doubted the immorality of the soul. Also entered in Wikipedia is deist terminology. Deist authors in 17th and 18th century theologians in general referred to God using a variety of vivid circumlocutions, such as supreme being, divine watchmaker, grand architect of the universe, nature's God, which is used in the United States Declaration of Independence, father of lights. Benjamin Franklin used this terminology when proposing that meetings of the Constitutional Convention begin with prayers. Another entry in Wikipedia is historical background of the emergence of deism. Deistic thinking has existed since ancient times. Among the ancient Greeks, Heraclitus conceived of a logos, a supreme rational principle, and said the wisdom by which all things are steered through all things was both willing and unwilling to be called theist or God. Plato envisioned God as a demiurge or craftsman. Outside ancient Greece, many other cultures have expressed views that resemble deism in some respects. However, the word deism, as it is understood today, is generally used to refer to the movement toward natural theology or free thinking that occurred in 17th century Europe and specifically in Britain. Natural theology is a facet of the revolution in worldview that occurred in Europe in the 17th century. To understand the background to that revolution is also to understand the background of deism. Several cultural movements of the time contributed to the movement. Further, the discovery of diversity is addressed in Wikipedia. The humanist tradition of the Renaissance included a revival of interest in Europe's classical past in ancient Greece and Rome. The veneration of that classical past, particularly pre-Christian Rome, the new availability of Greek philosophical works, the successes of humanism and natural science, along with the fragmentation of the Christian churches and increased understanding of other faiths, also helped erode the image of the church as the unique source of wisdom destined to dominate the whole world. In addition, study of classical documents led to the realization that some historical documents are less reliable than others, which led to the beginnings of biblical criticism. In particular, when scholars worked on biblical manuscripts, they began developing the principles of textual criticism and a view of the New Testament being the product of a particular historical period different from their own. The religious conflict in Europe is summarized by the following Wikipedia entry. Europe had been plagued by sectarian conflicts and religious wars since the beginning of the Revolution. Since the beginning of Reformation. In 1642, Lord Herbert Sherbury, De Verita, was published. The Thirty Years' War had been raging on continental Europe for nearly 25 years. It was an enormously destructive war that is estimated destroyed 15% to 20% of the population of Germany. At the same time, the English Civil War, putting king against parliament, was just beginning. Such massive violence led to a search for natural religious truths, truths that could be universally accepted because they had been either written in the book of nature or engraved on the human mind by God. Advances in scientific knowledge can also help with understanding colonial thinking, as the following Wikipedia entry illustrates. the 17th century saw a remarkable advance in scientific knowledge, the scientific revolution. The work of Copernicus, Kepler, and Galileo set aside the old notion that the Earth was the center of the universe. These discoveries posed a serious challenge to biblical and religious authorities. Galileo's condemnation for heresy being an example. In consequence, the Bible came to be seen as authoritative on matters of faith and morals, but no longer authoritative or meant to be on science. Isaac Newton, 1642 to 1727, mathematical explanation of universal gravitation explained the behavior both of objects here on Earth and of objects in heaven in a way that promoted a worldview in which the natural universe is controlled by laws of nature. This, in turn, suggested a theology in which God created the universe, set it in motion, controlled by natural law, and retired from the scene. The new awareness of the explanatory power of universal natural law also produced a growing skepticism about such religious staples as miracles, violations of natural laws, and about religious books that reported them. Lord Herbert of Cherbury, The Antient Religion of the Gentiles and Causes of Their Errors, pages 3 to 4, quoted in John Orr, English Deism, page 62. The following lengthy quote from Herbert can give the flavor of his writings and demonstrate the sense of the importance of that Herbert attributed to innate common notions, which can help in understanding the effect of Locke's attack on innate ideas on Herbert's philosophy. No general agreement exists concerning the gods, but there is universal recognition of God. Every religion in the past has acknowledged, every religion in the future will acknowledge some sovereign deity among the gods. Accordingly, that which is everywhere accepted as the supreme manifestation of deity, by whatever name it may be called, I term God. While there is no general agreement concerning the worship of gods, secret beings, saints, and angels, yet the common notion, our universal consent, tells us that adoration ought to be reserved for the one God, hence divine religion, and no race, however savage, has existed without some expression of it. It is found established among all nations. The connection of virtue with piety, defined in this work, is right confirmation of the faculties and always has been held to be the most important part of religious practice. There is no general agreement concerning rites, ceremonies, traditions, but there is the greatest possible consensus of opinion concerning the right confirmation of the faculties, moral virtue. Moral virtue is and always has been esteemed by men in every age and place and respected in every land. There is no general agreement concerning the various rites or mysteries which the priests have devised for the expiation of sin. General agreement among religions, the nature of divine goodness, and above all conscience, tell us that our crimes may be washed away by true penitence, and that we can be restored to new union with God. I do not wish to consider here whether any other, more appropriate means exist by which the divine justice may be appeased, since I have undertaken in this work only to rely on truths which are not open to dispute, but are derived from the evidence of immediate perception and admitted by the whole world. The rewards that are eternal have been variously placed in heaven, in the stars, in the Elysian fields. Punishment has been thought to lie in metempsychosis in hell, our temporary and everlasting death. But all religion, law, philosophy, and conscience teach openly or implicitly that punishment or reward awaits us after this life. There is no nation, however barbarous, which has not and will not recognize the existence of punishment and rewards. the reward and punishment exist is then a common notion, though there is the greatest difference of opinion as to their nature, quality, extent, and mode. It follows from these considerations that the dogmas which recognize a sovereign deity and enjoin us to worship him, command us to live a holy life, lead us to repent our sins, and warn us of future recompense or punishment, proceed from God and are inscribed within us in the form of common notions. Revealed truth exists, and it would be unjust to ignore it, but its nature is quite distinct from the truth based on common notions. The truth of revelation depends upon the authority of him who reveals it. We must then proceed with great care in discerning what actually is revealed. We must take great care to avoid deception, for men who are depressed, superstitious, or ignorant of causes are always liable to it. Lord Herbert Cherbury de Verate. According to Gay, Herbert had relatively few followers, and it was not until 1680s that Herbert found a true successor in Charles Blount, 1654 to 1693. Blount made one special contribution to the deist debate. By utilizing his wide classical learning, Blount demonstrated how to use pagan writers and pagan ideas against Christianity. Other deists were to follow his lead. Deism in Britain is further addressed by the following Wikipedia entry concerning John Locke. The publication of John Locke's An Essay Concerning Human Understanding, 1689, but dated 1690, marks a major turning point in the history of deism. Since Herbert de Verate's innate ideas had been the foundation of deist epistemology, Locke's famous attack on innate ideas in the first book of the essay effectively destroyed that foundation and replaced it with the theory of knowledge based on experience. Innatist deism was replaced by empiricist deism. Locke himself was not a deist. He believed in both miracles and revelation, and he regarded miracles as the main proof of revelation. After Locke, constructive deism could no longer appeal to innate ideas for justification of its basic tenets, such as the existence of God. Instead, under the influence of Locke and Newton, deists turned to the natural theology and to the arguments based on experience and nature. The cosmological argument and the argument from design. Peter Gay places the zenith of design from the end of the 1690s, when the vehement response to John Toland's Christianity Not Mysterious, 1696, started the deist debate, to the end of 1740s, when the tepid response to Conyers Middleton's Free Inquiry signaled its close. Now only a little information. Only a little information about Thomas Paine will be covered with the next episode. The next episode will continue with Age of Reason and Thomas Paine. Thanks for listening, and please remember to join host Thaddea Aegis Fridays at 6 p.m. Saturdays, you can join host Kaden Behan for her show starting at 6 p.m. Sundays, you can join me, Kathy Woodring, for my show at 11 p.m. Thanks again to co-host Pamela Clark, founder of New Heights Educational Group, for co-hosting and all she does. Thanks for listening, and have a great night. Stormy seas, I
beyond.